Hello, welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Representative Hornstein, and bienvenidos al Comité de Transportación. So we have several bills on the agenda today, and we're going to start with House File 348, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is somebody going to move the bill for me?
I will move that House File 348 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, the reason that we have this bill in our possession, passed the transportation policy bill, is that there is some fiscal impact. We don't have a fiscal note before us. Apparently, that is still being worked on, but because these driver's licenses would have a different look to them, there is a small fiscal impact, and DVS, I believe, is working with our House fiscal staff on that fiscal note. So that's the rationale for sending it to the Ways and Means Committee. Well, Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, so you're going to send it out of this committee not knowing what it costs?
Well, you know, we're apparently Mr. Lee is in pursuit of something. So.
Okay. But it is your intent to vote it out today,
yeah.
Even if we don't have a fiscal note?
Well, we certainly can talk about that, and I would be talking to, I mean, I imagine Ms. McCormick will be able to at least give us some information, but I wouldn't want to vote it out without having a sense of the fiscal impact, and that's why it's here.
All righty, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. So the bill that you have before you has gone through another committee and been modified, and I just wanted to say that the purpose of the bill, again, is a public safety measure to allow persons who are undocumented in this country to be able to provide some alternative documents that are specifically spelled out on page 2 of the bill. And I want to thank some of my colleagues on this committee, Representative Neuberger and Representative Beard, who worked with me on the language on page 2, which basically, again, what we allow is a government identification card is acceptable if it's a primary document as already specified in the law, and that it also can include a government identification card that's a valid unexpired passport issued by a country other than the United States, with a birth certificate from a country other than the United States, District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, or the United States Virgin Islands. And then a passport or birth certificate must have the security features that make it impervious to alteration. And then one of the important amendments also was that any document not in English must be accompanied by a qualified English translation. And we already have some of that capability. But we're making that very clear in this bill that that needs to be there, and that's, I think, Representative Neuberger for that concern. The additional part of this bill is that this identification card will have on it a term that says status check without a date, and that is an indication that the person is not a U.S. citizen. So I would like to just ask members to support this bill. We have I know since there's limited time, I'll just ask for one witness, I guess, and then if you want, the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles is here as well, and she can testify. Yeah. We worked with her very closely. So may I call one witness, Mr. Chair?
Yes, absolutely, okay. Representative Clark. Are there any initial questions of the author at this point? Representative Beard.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to you and to Representative Clark for working to hear some concerns I know that folks had, because this is a de facto government ID. And I just want to know that's appreciated, and we'll look forward to the vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Beard, and thank you for your willingness to work with the author on this and expressing your concerns so clearly. Representative Clark, if
I have one witness.
You have somebody?
Ms. Wendy Hickey.
Welcome, and if you could please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Wendy Hickey, and I am the current president of La Puerta Abuertas United Methodist Women's Group, located at La Puerta Abuertas United Methodist Church in St. Paul. And on behalf of our women's unit and United Methodist Women's Units across the state of Minnesota, we would like to show our support for this bill. We believe that it is very important for all of our members at our United Methodist Church and in the entire community to be able to safely transport their families to church, to school, to hospitals. We strongly support this bill. We do not believe that this bill is an immigration issue. We strongly believe that this bill is a safety issue. It would also allow all of our members to be able to have insurance, which would protect themselves and everyone else out on the road. Not only is this bill important to me as a representative of United Methodist Women's Group, but it's also important to me personally, as my husband does not have documentation at this point. And we have three small children, a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 8-year-old, that do rely on my husband to transport them around. He has been here since 1996. For 14 years in the state of Minnesota, he was able to have a driver's license legally. Unfortunately, in 2003, with change of law, there was some different restrictions. And because of that change, 3 years ago, my husband received a letter in the mail from the Department of Motor Vehicles stating that he would no longer be able to legally drive. And that puts my husband and all of our family at risk, and it puts many other people at risk. We support this bill because it would provide safer roads for my family and for thousands of families out on the road. I would like to share with the committee that this is not only an issue of Hispanic. This does not only affect the Hispanic community. It affects my family directly, and it affects many families that are very similar to mine. It affects many communities and many different cultures all over Minnesota. And again, this is not an issue of immigration. This is a safety issue for many, many families. And we thank you for taking the time to look at this very important bill.
Thank you, Ms. Hickey. Are there any questions of our witness?
I just have a comment, Mr.
Okay, Chairman. A comment, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not a Methodist, but I support this bill. So.
Representative Earhart's taking up where he left off last night. Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much, Representative Clark. I would like to call on Pat McCormick from Driver and Vehicle Services. I think it's very important to get the agency's perspective on this, both policy issues but mainly fiscal issues. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. You probably have seen a fiscal note that was done prior to this engrossed version of the bill, and so that fiscal note would not apply in this case because of the fact that it talks about us having to do some rulemaking and some other things that would not be necessary because of some of the changes the committee made in the legislation previously. We have not been, as you know, every department has to be requested by management and budget to do a fiscal note, and so we have not done any official fiscal note. We have been looking at the language, and our current driver's license contract requires us to pay for any change order that would occur on the driver's license. And so there would be some costs involved in that. We don't have an official, we can't give you an official estimate, but it would be a little bit less, we think, than what the current fiscal note is. It would allow for, if this bill would pass, it would allow for us to have the programming change done so that the law could go into effect on the date that you have in the engrossed version of the bill. But there would be some costs in order to implement this, because it would be, right now we have status check and we have a date next to it. This would be a different status check card, which would have just status check. And so that would be there would be some costs associated with it. We're hearing it could be around $40,000. We don't have anything official right now, so that's all I can state in terms of that question.
Okay, and thank you very much. And I just a couple of questions, Ms. McCormick. So it's your understanding that because of the amendment that was added to this bill in the policy committee, the fiscal cost actually goes down from the fiscal note that was originally issued for this bill, and I do believe, still my understanding that Mr. Lee is trying to hunt down that original note. But, you have a copy. Okay, so if you could, and we'll try to get copies for the committee, if you could just outline specifically how the cost decreases, the note states what in terms of...
Well, the note, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the note states there would be a cost of about $52,000.
Okay.
Most of that cost has to do with reissuing cards without a status check, and that's what the cost was for. It wasn't for rulemaking. It was to reissue cards. You addressed that in the amendment that you you okayed at the other committee hearing, but there would be a cost in terms of production because right now we only use status check with a date next to it, so there would be a change in programming for our manufacturer of the cards, and we have a contract, and the contract allows that anytime we change a card we have to pay the costs associated with the change in their production process. And so
So thank you, Ms. McCarty. So just to review, we have previous fiscal note before us. We have testimony on the record now indicating that this cost goes down from $52,000 to $40,000. Representative Beard, do you have a question?
Ms. McCormick, Mr. Chair, I do. Ms. McCormick, I'm having been in the printing business, I'm trying to get my fiscal arms around how leaving a date off but leaving the word status check actually costs the printer money. Can you help us understand? I know you just tried to explain that, and then I wasn't grasping it.
Mr. Chair and
Ms. McCormick,
Representative Beard, the issue is that there's the information has to be programmed and then sent to the manufacturer, and so it's a matter of the data stream, is my understanding, and also the fact that then they have to have. They would still have to do the cards that we currently do. So it involves developing an additional process. And that is, it is part of our contract that anytime we make a change to the card, there's costs. And so we have to abide by the contract that we've signed with them.
Well, Mr. Chair,
again, Representative Beard,
it's the mysterious workings of DVS that baffled me for years and continue to do so. I suppose not even like we go on a field trip, because what are we going to look at? Desks and a computer, I suppose. But Ms. McCormick, because I have such unshakable faith in your word, I'll just take it at that. But again, I'm Mr. Chair, I'm just having trouble understanding how there can be any cost in leaving some letters off of it.
Well, Representative Beard, once the Mynlar system is up and running, then we'll be able to have everything hunky-dory with all that.
I'm sure we will.
Discussion to the bill. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Or any other, are there further questions of Ms. McCormick? Representative Holbert.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure who the question would be, but would these driver's license be of a different color or any readily identifiable difference from other driver's licenses?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I think we would have to implement whatever the language says. It doesn't say that it should be a different design or anything like that, whether there'd be another header. The one thing I can bring up, and I wanted to address what Representative Beard said as well, is that we're also at the point in time where we're just starting another RFP process for a new driver's license. And so, you know, there may be other issues that would come up in terms of that, in terms of having different cards. We're not that far along yet. We're just starting to work on the RFP and getting it out. And so that, you know, then things could be changed depending on what the laws are at the current time that we go out for bid on with the new RFP for a driver's license ID card.
Thank you. Representative Howe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Holbrook? Sorry about that.
I'm sorry, I wasn't in the other committees
that
heard this, and this is an issue that's been around for a while. And in the past, we've had testimony from banking institutions and things about their requirements on a federal level for certain information that's contained in a traditional driver's license. And I'm wondering if Representative Clark can let us know if they're okay with this bill or if those concerns are still there.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I didn't understand if who's okay with the bill.
The banking industry. In 2003, I think a lot of the changes that were implemented were driven on a federal level after 9/11, and we've had additional regulations around the banking issue, and they have to meet certain standards in order to have driver's licenses that are accepted for business practices, et cetera. And that has always been an issue of discussion in past years. And
Mr. Chair,
Representative Clark.
Representative Holberg, I'm not aware of any concerns that have been raised by any of those institutions. What's clear about this is that this is a card that requires, you know, a lot of documentation, certification. The documents that are listed here are supposed to have impervious protections in them and all of that, so that we're not doing anything that would, I think, put at risk any of the institutions that work with individuals with these cards. It does have on there the status check language in this version here, and the way that works is that there is still a notation on there that's a little bit different from from the driver's license that you and I have, and that seems to satisfy the individuals that are concerned about it. And we have support. I think I forgot to mention. I think I passed around a letter from the Minneapolis chief of police. I understand similarly support from deputy chief in St. Paul, working with the Winona Police Department or sheriff. Sheriffs, and I believe the Wilmer chief of police. All of the law enforcement people involved that we have worked with so far, and they were continuing to, I think, work with some of the organizations, statewide organizations that they work with, have all indicated support. So it doesn't seem to be an issue that anyone is concerned about beyond what we've done here. So I'm hoping that we've met all the concerns, and again, we took some suggestions from Representative Beard and Representative Neuberger, and so that's what you have before you, I think, is a pretty secure document that shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. McCormick can help. You've been in your position for a long time and have watched this issue over the years. Will this card satisfy those federal requirements and standards and for the use of that we use the driver's license to open checking accounts and those kinds of things? Does this fit within the federal requirements?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we make a card in order to be able to demonstrate that the person is who they say they are, and also that they, for those that are driving, that they meet all of our requirements in order to be a valid driver. As you stated, a lot of other corporations, companies, and other agencies use that document to prove identity for whatever their purpose is. So I can't really speak to the financial institutions. I think that our card in general has the security features that are required of all states to have on their card, so that you can't try to be able to make your own card to match ours because of the types of technology, the various layers to the card, and the laminate all provide a certain amount of security so that it's not able to be made in your basement. So I think in that respect, we would meet those requirements, and certainly in our new contract, those are all key for us to have.
So. Representative Holbrook.
Maybe I'll flip this around. Okay. In the past, when somebody would come to Minnesota and want to apply for a license, depending on what state they came from, we would either accept just their driver's license, or if the conditions of meeting a driver's license in the state that they came from were not at the same standard or level, we would then require additional documentation. So Montana's driver's license, somebody from there could just show it and we take it. Other states, we would require additional certification. So number one, is that still the case? And number two, would this change affect that standard in reverse? If somebody from Minnesota went to another state, would they not meet those requirements?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we do require you to have a primary document which would be allowed, which could include your license from another state, but you also have to have an additional document, and nothing would change in this process. These rules would still be in place, and so it still would be, you would still have to meet the requirements. Now, in this particular case, the amendment is specific in terms of the documents that would be needed for these different, you know, this would be a card that has a status check on it. So this would be different than the primary and secondary documents there. This is more specific as to what they would have.
All right, thank you.
Okay. I have Representative Howe and Representative Petersburg, and then I'd like to move to a vote if the committee is comfortable. Representative Howe, there you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question to the bill, and you know, I apologize for being a little bit late. Maybe you already covered it, but on line 122, it in the application requirements, it talks about some of the information you have to apply, and that's the resident address. And then again, in line 2.8 and 2.9, it talks about you must attest to a resident address in Minnesota. Do we actually give driver's license to folks that don't live in Minnesota? And I guess the other question I have is, what's the difference between those two lines and requirements?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Powell, the way that Minnesota verifies residence is we do not issue a card over the counter to you. It's mailed to the address on your card. And if you're not there, then it comes back to us. And then we keep the card, and the only way you would be able to get the card would be to come into one of our offices, and then we would give you the card so we can see who you are and verify that you are that same person. You can't send it to a post office box. It has to go to an actual residence. That's how we implement residence. This is, in this bill, this is also asking that you'd attest to your residence, and that would be a line on the application of the driver's license. That's what this legislation would do, so that you would be just attesting as part of your application, which you have to sign and date, so we have your signature on it, that you are a resident of Minnesota. But you're going to have a Minnesota address that it's mailed to, and it has to be an actual address, not a post office box or a mailbox, et cetera, or anything like that.
Representative Howe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the city that I live, I can have any one of five different addresses. But the majority of part of my area has, if they want to get their mail, it's a post office box. So how do they currently get their license now? And I mean, it currently works now. What does this do? Do we need this for folks to currently get their license? I mean, I don't understand what changes to make this a current requirement.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, I think that this is a requirement. This is the author's requirement. This isn't something we asked for. This was part of the legislation. But we would first let me t- talk in two different parts. First of all, there are certain locations where we know everyone has a post office box, or you know, and those locations we do know that we work closely with the post office. So there are locations throughout the state where we do send it to a post office box because of the mailing address issue. But those are the only ones that we send a post office box. We wouldn't send it to any other one. But this was, the legislation just said that this would be someone that would attest to the fact that even though they are not, they would have to state, and so that would mean that if at some point in time we found out that they weren't in Minnesota, we would have the evidence, they weren't living in Minnesota, we would have the evidence on our application that they had attested to it falsely, and we would cancel that license. So that would be the reason that that's why this I'm assuming that's why this requirement is listed on here.
Representative Howe.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
Then
Chair.
We'll move on to our next questioners. No, please.
So this is my last question,
well,
Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Howe, I'll give you a little bit of latitude, but we have a couple more people on the list, and I'd like to move on. But go ahead.
Well, if I falsify line 1.22, and give you that address, and it we find out later that proves to be false, couldn't you nullify and void my driver's license at that point? Why do I need another line to tell me that, hey, you falsified your information? I think we're adding additional language that to try to satisfy a deal that's not. We got a solution looking for a problem in these two lines, I guess.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, this is not our language, and so I would have to look to the authors in terms of what they believe they wanted to have in the language. We do need to verify residency, and that's why we mail out our applications our cards to the people that have applied for the license.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I could just respond. I mean, what we are dealing with here is restricting this to only Minnesota residents, and that's why the line is there.
Representative Howe, I'm okay if you want to ask another question or two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we would not give a license to anybody that wasn't a resident of this state, and they got to attest to it in line 1.22, and now we got to attest to it again in 2.8 and 2.9. So I guess I'm struggling with the fact that we already attest to it in 1.22, and now we ask them to do it again in 2.8, and I guess I don't know. Can you explain to me why we do that?
Representative Howe, I wonder whether at this point we could either have Representative Clark, but Mr. Burris could even, you know, weigh in on this as counsel.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I don't care who answers it. I'm just looking for an answer.
Yeah, I know. I see that. Either the author or Mr. Burris. Representative Clark, do you want to take a stab at it?
We also have counsel. What I thought it was, and I mean, if you want to remove that line, I suppose that's okay. It doesn't seem to. I think we were just trying to be very careful to make sure that there was a place where people were putting down their correct address. And I'm not aware of any other reason for it.
Mr. Burris, do you want to quickly weigh in, and then we'll move on to our next questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, just so you're aware, the language on 1.22 actually backs up to a requirement that starts on 1.19. It's a set of requirements that apply only to enhanced driver's licenses or enhanced identification cards. Those are slightly different sets of documents that are essentially function like passports. So the requirements that you're seeing on that line are only for those types of cards.
Then on 1.9, what's that resident address? So now I'm seeing we got three different addresses. If you could expound on that.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howe, one other distinction I guess I didn't touch on is that the residence address that's required on the application on 1.9 doesn't actually specify Minnesota residence. as part of the requirement, and the new requirement being put into place on 2.8 and 2.9 is that it would be Minnesota. The new requirement that's in the bill language on 2.8 and 2.9 reflects what's currently in administrative rules requiring attesting, the attesting aspect of it, and Minnesota residents.
I'm going to ask one last clarifying question for Representative Halb. I know you want to get your information here, but we have a lot more.
Because I believe that this goes to the root of the issue in my book. I mean, if we, and I, so in section 5B.05, that doesn't make that a required Minnesota address. So we do, excuse me, we do give Minnesota driver's license to people that aren't residents of Minnesota. I mean, I would suspect that under section 5B.05, and I don't have that in front of me, but you know, I see that we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4 different sections in here, and I understand where now 1, 2, 2 is a little bit different, but I would believe that the residents got to be Minnesota.
I'm going to ask, Representative Beard wants to comment on this, yep. And then I think that we'll move on after this. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As I understood in discussions, because this concerned me a great deal in the previous committee where we talked this through, part of what line 2.8 does is actually puts in statute what's already in play in rules the department has put together, and it actually raises the bar to increase the integrity of what we're trying to do here. So it may seem like we're doing something now that's a little loose. Actually, I don't think it is as much as people think it is, but what's actually happening on line 2.8 has been represented to me is it actually does raise the bar and increase the integrity of what we're trying to do, to issue a public safety driver's license to people who don't have a visa to be in the country but can prove they actually live in Minnesota and have a residence here somewhere. That's all that's trying to do. There's nothing else to it, and I actually see it as a step in the right direction, Mr. Chair. So it might be being misunderstood, but I just want you to understand that this actually does tighten things and raise the bar. That's the effect it has.
Okay. So thank you. I hope that's helpful. I'm going to call on Representative Petersburg and Representative Benson, and then we're going to need to move on. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman. And this one, being that we're on a finance committee, I thought we'd bring it back to finances and talk about that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. The fiscal note here, now I noticed that we have the cost of the license there, and then it says that there is no revenue, and so maybe it's just my inexperience in knowing how this happens, but I know that when I apply for a license, I have to pay a fee, and so I'm wondering if somebody can tell me, does that fee go somewhere else then, or is it applied towards this, and how much it is, et cetera?
Maybe that's a Ms. McCormick question.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, the fee for the card is that charge pays for all the costs associated with the card, the production of the card, the postage that's required of the card, the application, the staff that have to issue the cards, the driver license examiners that examine people for the road tests, all that's paid for is part of the driver license process. So that's what the cost of the card is, and then there, and so we charge, I think it's $23.25 for a new card. So that would be what the cost is. An ID card is $12.75. So with the $23.25, you're paying for the exam that's done with drivers, the knowledge test as well as the road test. We don't charge another fee for that. The ID card is just for the card and the issuing of that card.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I think I heard you say in the middle of that those fees go towards paying for the production of the card. Is that correct?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, that is correct.
So wouldn't that apply then for the production of this card as well? And so therefore there would be some revenue source, correct?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, those would be the costs, or those would be the revenue that we of course have to have that revenue appropriated to us. The revenue goes into the special revenue funds, but it's up to the legislature and the governor to appropriate the money for us to be able to use the money in producing them. So we'll collect the money, but unless you appropriate it through legislation, we wouldn't have the money to be able to use it.
So Representative Peters.
Mr. Chair, you probably could tell me too, somebody. So will this be handled any differently than all the rest of the appropriation for driver's licenses?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, no, it would be part of our regular process.
Representative Holbert.
Well, and then Mr. Chair, to that point, I mean, generally when a bill leaves a finance company, a committee with a cost, the bill says how it's going to be paid for. And I don't see any, I mean, I don't know if it's the chair's intent that the general fund would pay this cost, or, I mean, like in the case of specialty plates, we put a surcharge on the plate until the upfront costs are paid for. So I'm just kind of curious the fact that we're going to send this to Ways and Means with no way to pay for it, what the chair's intent is.
Well,
we
have a target, and this committee will stay within its general fund budget target. So, you know, I think we'll work on that, and we'll be true to that.
And Mr. Chair, generally that's like the omnibus bill meets your target, and
correct.
So you're going to send this out separate and then put this in the omnibus bill?
Well,
too, or?
It's yeah. I mean, we'll this bill will not reach the floor without you know, without this question answered, and we have options to do it in the omnibus bill or to go to Ways and Means. But at this point, we're going to go to Ways and Means.
And so, if I might be clear, are you going to recommend in Ways and Means that it's general fund money, or are you going to recommend some type of surcharge?
We're going to talk that through with the DVS, but we have the option of the general fund, certainly. We have one last question from Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would think that there would be funds available already to pay for this. My question really goes to safety, but my assumption was that you already have $40,000 in some account over there that you could have spoke up about. But my question is about public safety. And I know the folks from public safety up there, and I'm sure if I don't want to belabor the proceeding, but however, I mean, it would have been good to hear a little bit in terms from them. But my question goes to, I heard a comment earlier regarding insurance, and through a roundabout way, I found out that we have 600,000 uninsured motorists, uninsured vehicles in the state. In pensions committee, because we're going to levy a $5 charge on every vehicle for a piece of pensions. From my understanding of the process, of course, is you need a driver's license to get insurance, and if whether or not if the representative would know how this would impact improving that and reducing the number of insured motorists. My whole idea behind the question is this a great public safety issue? I mean, it goes beyond the convenience, of course, and the life issues that most of the folks that are here today are, you know, witnessing and the improvement that will have. But from a public service standpoint, are we talking 300,000 vehicles that potentially could suddenly be insured because the folks have the proper documentation to go to an insurance carrier and get that?
To either of the panelists here, Representative Clark, you want to take that? Representative
Mr. Chairman,
Clark will yield to Ms. McCormick.
I'll just say I don't have an exact number. I think that's part of the problem, and once we have people able to get insurance, we'll be taking care of a large part of that public safety problem. I'll yield to McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, you have to bring in proof of insurance to get a driver's license. You can't, we won't take, give you or administer a road test without an insurance certificate to show that you have insurance. As you know, in the state of Minnesota, the insurance requirement is on the vehicle and not necessarily on the driver. But in terms of getting a license, you will not be able to get it unless we have an insurance card that's issued to you as that individual, and we have proof of that.
Just a follow-up then. And I figured that's how we were going to hear it to be answered. I'm just wondering, however, if my brother has a car and I want to get a driver's license. He insures the car. Do I still need some proof of insurance? It's not my car.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have to have know that you have insurance. It's for our safety, if for one thing, for our examiners to be in the car with you. And so it's a liability issue for us. And so as a result, we require that that individual show that they have proof of insurance.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, I don't have any additional people on the list. I don't have anyone else who is signed up to testify unless there's additional people in the audience. We'll move to a vote. Do you have any final comments, Representative Clark? Briefly.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, just I urge your support. We would be, at this point, the fifth state in the country who is passing this type of legislation. Is pending in about 20 other states, so I think it's a very timely effort, and I urge your support.
Thank you. With that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 348 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. You're on your way to Ways and
Thank
Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Representative Holberg will continue our conversations about this fiscal issue. Okay, members, we're going to revert to the item number 6 on our agenda, Representative Swatsky, right? Is that you? Representative Swatsky has some out-of-town people, and we wanted to make sure. Is she here? Okay, you know what? We'll have Representative Kwan, because I think his is quick. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 123 for consideration by the committee.
Okay. I think this is also, thank you, Representative Holberg, and I think this is also going to Ways and Means as well, my understanding. Okay. And I also see that there's an amendment, Representative Kwan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the amendment is along the lines we discussed yesterday that would limit the reports to the years of 2015 and 2017.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Okay. Thank you. I think we have an explanation of the A2 amendment. Are there any questions? Is there any discussion, members, to the A2 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is incorporated in House File 123. To the bill, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we discussed yesterday, there wouldn't be a general fund impact because of the amendment yesterday, and that the cost is about one-seventh of what the present average income from sales of property, and that, you know, basic intent is to actually get an inventory of all the properties that the MnDOT has and then assess them to understand what category they fall into and if any of them are sellable, and then give a report to the legislature.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Holberg.
Is there a fiscal note on this?
Mr. Lee. Okay, I think we have the same situations we had with the previous bill, Representative Holberg. There's an earlier fiscal note, but we don't have it related to this amendment.
And
Representative Kwan.
For in the future, I mean, it's really unusual that we're considering bills in finance without a fiscal note. And
right.
Even
well,
if there's one that's a little stale, to have that printed in the packet might help us.
Thank
so
you.
We could discern what is still a cost and what's been negated.
I understand. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg, yesterday in the packet was included a fiscal note and the 2 years in which they would be doing the surveying and the analysis. It was, I believe, $213,000, and the second year was slightly higher, but just a little over $200,000. And it was also testified that looking over the past several years, $1.5 million is the average income from the present system, And so that, you know, the fiscal note was, you know, again, maybe a seventh per year. The cost of doing the report was down at, it was at either $11,000 or $13,000 to be able to generate the report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So just to review, members, this bill was heard and we laid it over. Wasn't quite ready. There's an amendment. I think we still have to ascertain whether it's ready as well, post-amendment. And so we had yesterday's fiscal note, but the amendment, I think, has some implications. So that's that was really the issue here. Members, is there any additional discussion to House File 123? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Quam. I appreciate you coming. We spent at length talking about this, and you shared with me what your ideas, you saw what MnDOT would do to be able to make this type of decision. And actually, I'm on board with your vision of MnDOT taking into having an inventory of their current multimodal facilities and knowing what their long-term plan is for that and then being able to make a decision on the parcels that would be available. I did meet with MnDOT after our conversation to ask them if they were under the same understanding that that's what the procedure they would go to get to that decision. And they're welcome to comment on this as well, but they did not have the same understanding that that's what would take place within MnDOT to come up with that decision. And frankly, I would love to work with you on a bill that actually would make something like that happen. I think it's important if we have for our state agency to actually know what the inventory they have on all their different facilities, and then being able and having a long-term plan. Those are the outcomes that I would like to see from this bill, and then it would achieve what you're looking for as well. Without that happening, I am not for this bill going through yet, because they're going to be making decisions without having inventory of their current facilities, making decisions without the long-term planning for all their systems. So I think that the intent of the bill is actually has a lot of merit. I don't think MnDOT is at the place, from what I understand talking with them, that they can actually achieve what you had shared with me that you would hope that they would go through. And I actually would like to work with you on that to make something like that happen. So I don't know where that leads us, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Quam wants, Representative Quam wants to contact, or MnDOT come down?
Well, it would probably be helpful to have MnDOT's perspective on this, and then we can ascertain whether there needs to be more work or not. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And as Representative Bernardi said, we did have a conversation with her last evening about the bill, and I think maybe the difference comes down to the level of detail at which we would conduct our analysis for the whether a parcel of land that MnDOT owns is surplus, truly surplus or not. And as an example, I would just offer the people that would be doing the survey and identifying the parcels that MnDOT owns and make the determination would be looking at the current plans for our system, but also other types of transportation facilities that may be on the books in the locations where they are where the parcels are located. And there might be an instance where there's a parcel that is on one of the potential alignments for, say, a trail expansion or a local road improvement or something that might be tangential to the trunk highway system but not a part of the trunk highway system. And at that point in time, we would not envision, like, doing a more detailed layout to determine how much of that parcel might be needed and how much of it might actually be surplus, but rather we'd be tempted to just say this is not surplus because it has a potential future use as a transportation for a transportation purpose. And so I think that's kind of where we come down, is we would not be looking to do this more detailed analysis under the requirements of Representative Quam's bill. And so that would significantly expand the scope of the work to be done if that were the expectation. And so, and that's kind of the department's position.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm concerned that knowing that we have that stuff out there and it's not inventoried, and you have that knowledge that's out there, I'm just surprised that the leadership's not shown just to go ahead and given the intent that you know that we currently are voicing here, that we wouldn't go ahead and just start doing that and go in that direction, knowing that that's the feeling that most, I think most of us here would like us to get to, whether it's laid out. Do we need to lay out everything in legislative statute to go forward with that idea?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Howe, I agree. This is something that we should put more effort into. I think we have a responsibility to put back into private hands the land that we truly do not need. It's always been a struggle for the people in the districts to devote resources to it because their focus has historically been on acquiring property for future improvements rather than, you know, assessing property that we already own and trying to decide what to do. And I think your comments are well taken, that this is something that we should take back internally and focus on as just a matter of good management. And that's one of the reasons we've been working with Representative Quam on this bill, is because we see the value in doing something like this. And so if the legislature sees fit to put it into statute, we're glad to take it on.
Okay, Representative Benson and Representative Mason, then I have an idea for this bill, and then we're going to move on at 11 o'clock to Representative Swatsky's bill. Representative Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The author and MnDOT both being up there, I think you just heard it, folks, that, you know, in terms of this is something that we should have done. It's not been on their radar as a priority. It makes absolute sense to require the people who are holding potentially tax property that could go on the tax rolls. I think getting down into the weeds of whether it's multimodal or and all that in terms of that, what we're asking them to do is to assess whether or not there isn't a future need, and if there isn't, and in my mind, when they evaluate if there's a future need, they're going to take into consideration whether it has a multimodal purpose. So I think this is just smart business. This money's going to end up back in the trunk highway, and we're going to make some money off it. It's going to go into tax rolls, and everybody's happy. So what I hear is it hasn't been a priority. We need to give some money to these folks so that they can make it a priority and get it done. In 2 years, it's done. It's easy to inventory it afterwards because we've got a full description of what's out there right now. It's an absolute no-brainer.
Okay. Thank you for that. I have Representative Mason, Bernardi, and Sundin. And then, we may need to just hold this because we have some out-of-town testifiers coming in for Representative Swatsky's bill. So I'd really prefer to get this done beforehand, but if the committee wants more time to discuss it, I'm open to that too. Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, and you can comment on this. We've been hearing bill after bill that we know MnDOT is so far behind on projects. They have 20 and 30 year projects out there that we know impact lives. And so what I'm seeing here is we're adding another project to a department that is already so incredibly underfunded. I understand the logic of this, but the deal is we need to come up with the money to fund it. To me, it's just one more thing that needs to be added to the funding. And is this more important than doing highway, putting money into some of the highways where people are dying?
Thank you, Representative Bernardi, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wish Representative Benson was still here because I appreciate him weighing in on this. And I, too, share wanting to achieve – oh, good. I'm glad you're back, Representative Benson, because I wanted to address what you had to say. It would be great if we were at that point where we could make those decisions, but I think people around this committee might assume that MnDOT has the inventory already of their multimodal facilities, that they already have – a system plan for their multimodal facilities, but frankly, they're not there yet. And once they are there yet, they're there, then this is the next step to be able to do that. But until they have that information, being able to make decisions
to get rid of parcels is premature. So that's where I'm at. I just think it's not quite ready for prime time based on the information that MnDOT currently has of their own system and the gaps in it.
Just to let you know, there was that old commercial that has, I don't remember the stock company, when such and such stock company talks, people listen. So when Representative Holbrook talks, people listen. This is the updated with the amendment fiscal note. So anyway, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to remind the committee about the amendment that I brought forth last week regarding the cleanup of some contaminated land that the DOT was leasing to a company up in Big Falls. And it came down to the cost of $1 million to the state of Minnesota. It's in the governor's budget. And I think this is a good idea to inventory this land and unload some of it before we, you know, potentially could realize more liability issues on some of that land. And this is a good idea if it's not quite ready for prime time here, if the DOT and the chair have better ideas to help Mr. Quam get this done. I'd like to hear those ideas.
Well, this Representative Sundin, you were reading my mind. I mean, my thought is exactly the same. I think that this is a good idea. It's generally a sound idea. I still think there's some unanswered questions. I still want to have a degree of comfort level that MnDOT has with this that isn't quite there yet. And since we have this updated fiscal note in our possession now, I'm going to keep this bill in our committee and lay it over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. And that gives you an extension. So you now have about a two-week extension to get this right. And I think there is enough interest and support in the committee that it could very well be included, but we're not quite there yet. And I really appreciate your work on this. And so, you know, rather than, you know, taking a vote and, you know, not knowing how that's going to turn out and knowing that you have some more work to do, if that's okay with you, Representative Quam, we'll just lay this over. You've got break time to deal with this. But I will change the motion, if that's okay with Representative Holberg, that House File 123 be laid over for possible inclusion. Okay. All right. So thank you very much, Representative Quam. And thank you, committee members, for your engagement. I think this is a case study of how a committee can work together to improve a bill. So we're going to go now to House File 1263. Reverend Swatsky has some people that have traveled from West Central Minnesota to get here, and we want to make sure that they have enough time to present this bill. And actually, this is a bonding bill. So this gives me an opportunity, members, to pass out our ballots for our non-binding vote on the bonding bill. Now, all of these have your names on them.
What is that?
So I want to make sure there's no tampering, that this is a clean election. I'm going to pass these around. You take the ballot with your name on it, and you have about a little more than 24 hours to complete it. You get it back to Mr. Scheer 1 hour after our hearing tomorrow, because we're hearing some more bonding bills tomorrow. But again, it will not be a valid ballot. It will be a spoiled ballot unless it's the one that I'm handing you with your name on it. This is a fair and clean election, and we're going to be very, very clear about that. So I'm just going
to... I wanted to vouch for people.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, did you color
code? And it's not ranked choice voting.
What?
It's green, so the we have other green paper around here?
Well, I mean, that's...
Did somebody impersonate your handwriting?
You're going to have to impersonate Mr. Shear's handwriting. So, again, we'll be going over this very closely to make sure there's no fraud. Representative Swatsky, welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. We see you a lot in the Policy Committee, so welcome. And Highway 23.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 12.
Oh, excuse me, just 1 second, Representative Swatsky, just to be clear with you and your testifiers and, of course, our audience. I think we have people from the Mankato Chamber of Commerce. Are they still here? Okay, welcome. Had a great time in Mankato a couple weeks ago. Spoke there about transportation issues, so appreciate your coming to our committee. But so for your purposes and for the audience, we are not going to take action on this bill. This is an informational hearing, and as such, these ballots that we're handing out, your project will be considered by this committee as part of a process we have to issue a non-binding recommendation of bonding bills to the Capital Investment Committee. Since this is a transportation-related bill, that's the process we use. So, with that, Representative Swatsky.
All right. Welcome. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Hall, we need to do this. Wham. Get it done. Representative and I have a strong need to complete the Highway 23 Fill the Gap project. This project includes MnDOT District 3 and 8. We have approximately 7 miles of road that is not four lane. Each of us have approximately 7 miles is not a four lane. Thus, as you leave Wilmer north to Interstate Highway 94, and each of you should have a nice MnDOT map of the state of Minnesota with red lines going with four lanes. As you leave Wilmer north to Interstate Highway 94, the road changes from a four lane to a two lane, back to a four lane, and then two lane, and then back to four lane. A map, if you're finding that, please find letters also in your packets from Highway 23 Task Force, Candiwai County Board of Commissioners, the Wilmer Area Development Corporation Board of Directors, and the Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce in your packet. Today with us, we have representatives from each transportation district indicating the economic impact and safety measures that will make a difference in the lives of West Central Minnesota and make Highway 23 a true corridor of commerce.
Mr. Chair, if I could add on.
Please, welcome to your committee.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do is, you know, the thing is I guess I got a real issue with what happened here with Highway 23, because normally when you extend a four-lane highway, you extend it at the end and you keep on building. And I know Highway 14's got the same problem down there in the south. And this created when they did the bypass on Painesville, what it created was a traffic hazard on the both ends. So what happens is when we are flowing along at 70 miles an hour and restrict down to two lanes, and we get that crunch up, a lot of folks continue to try to drive on that two-lane highway at a high rate of speed. So what we do is we end up with safety problems both in District 8, between New London and Painesville, and then again as they go around Painesville, and then they come in and on the other side heading into to Richmond, we end up with the same problem. So what we'd like to do is this bill would at least get it four lanes and connect Wilmer and St. Cloud, all four-lane highway, and give access from 94 down to Wilmer, all four lanes, both ways. So that's the intent of the bill, and we'll bring the testifiers up.
Thank you very much. I have three people. I have three mayors. Great. Jeff Thompson from Painesville, and Scott Crone from Richmond, and Doug Schmitz from Cold Spring. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for our record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jeff Thompson, mayor of the city of Painesville, and it's been a few hours since we last met. I did get a little sleep last night. I hope you all did too. Thank you for this opportunity. Specifically in regards to the Painesville situation with Highway 23, Trunk Highway 23, it's been a 15-year process, and through that process we have finally come to a four-lane bypass around our community. We have gone into this with an understanding that there would be some immediate negative impacts, and we're starting to see that, and with the economic conditions the way they are, that is only, I guess, compounded somewhat. But my community understands that we're just kind of, still a small part of this, but very cognizant of the big picture and willing to look to the future. And we understand and realize that, the economy out in western and southern Minnesota is very heavily dependent on agriculture and moving some of that product back and forth. And if you, look on the map that you've been handed out, you will see that the southwestern and western part of Minnesota is severely, unsupported by four-lane highway. there's, as the farms out there get bigger, the trucks get bigger and more of them, and two-lane highways in conjunction with tractors and combines and traffic and that is not, you know, a safety issue, or it is a safety issue and needs to be addressed. Also, jobs are created because of the increase in transportation and the spinoff from growing agricultural and transportation related industries. We talked about safety a little bit there with the bigger trucks coming, and so this is also a, you know, safety issue there. As to congestion and maintenance, if you refer to the map, when I take a trip, I look for wide lines on the map, and knowing that there will always be services along the way. By opening up the southwestern Minnesota corridor, Highway 23, I would imagine that you would potentially shift some of the traffic away from the 169 corridor and the 35 corridor out away from the metropolitan area, which I think might help some of the congestion in the metropolitan area and ease some of the maintenance concerns there as well. And I'm not looking at this just from my community's aspect or from Wilmer or whatever, but if you go all along Highway 23, any community along there, even to the west of there, improving Highway 23 would benefit them greatly economically and also increase the safety. This has been a broad supported project, not just within my community. A lot of my constituents ask me, are we doing this just for Wilmer? And the answer is, my answer always was no, we're doing this for our community also. It's been supported by Representatives Colin Peterson, Mark Kennedy, Jim Oberstar, Michelle Bachman, Senators Dayton and Coleman all through this process. And as the others testifiers here, I think, will attest to, too, this is a broad support, and it benefits not just Painesville, my community, not just Wilmer, not just southwestern and western Minnesota, but the state as a whole. And I would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions? Okay. We have a second in our trio of mayors. Please, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Actually, I'm not a mayor. I'm a county commissioner from Kennedy, Ohio County.
Oh.
I represent the north east portion of the county, which includes the cities of New London and Spicer.
Well, then, Commissioner, please welcome and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Roger Imdick and members of the committee. The northeast part of the county, including New London and Spicer, is home to a great number of lakes. And we have a tourism is the second largest economy in our county. 2 years ago, Minnesota Monthly did a story where they called New London one of the 10 best secrets of places to visit in the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, while we appreciated the attention and the recognition we got for our thriving arts community, the recreation opportunities and the shopping opportunities in the area, it shouldn't be a secret. And part of the reason it is a secret is because we're one of the few areas of the state that are not served by a completed four-lane highway. Mr. Thompson talked about the commerce that is associated with it, and I think it's a well-known fact that economic development does follow the four-lane highways as they become completed. And I think that West Central Minnesota, as well as other parts of the state, should be treated in the same manner. Our home and business is within 25 miles of our home and business. There are over 200 lakes in the county. There are 7 county parks. There are 2 state parks. There's a DNR biking trail. And not only are the residents and the members of the communities of Northern Kennedy, Ohio County denied access for their business and economic growth, but there's about 2.5 million people from within 2 hours of the area that also don't come to our area sometimes because of the difficulty in getting there without a two-lane road. So, and you see that the support here, as Mr. Thompson mentioned, is not just for the northern part of the county. It includes Stearns County, Kennedy, Ohio County, the cities of Painesville, Wilmer, New London, Spicer, and beyond that, down to the I-90 interchange in southwestern Minnesota. So we appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the commissioner? Thank you.
I'd just like to add, Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank Representative Sawatsky and Representative Howell for bringing this bill to the committee.
And thank you, Commissioner. And I also was in Willmar, in addition to the trip I took to Mankato, and I heard a lot about this corridor there. And I was very impressed with you know, the community there and their passion for transportation. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, you travel a lot. Don't you like home?
I like talking about transportation.
All right.
And meeting people who are interested in it.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one additional testifier.
And I also am not a mayor. I am also a county commissioner for Candy High County.
Oh.
My name is Doug Reese.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
However, I did sit on the Willmar City Council for the last 26 years and have been mayor pro tem for many of those years at the end of my tenure, but as a new county commissioner as the first of the year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to reiterate what Mayor Thompson and Commissioner Imdyke had mentioned, and really want to have you understand that this is really a very joint effort between the cities and the communities along the corridor of Highway 23. And like I said, prior to being a county commissioner, being on the city council, there's been a number of projects that I want to note to you that have taken place. Even though I'm talking about Willmar, the benefits are clear along the corridor. But there were a number of projects that have been done within the city of Willmar that I want to pinpoint, and there's showing need for this these 2 7-mile segments to be brought to a four-lane corridor. The first one is Rice Memorial Hospital in Willmar. Not too many years ago, the city of Willmar, it's a city-owned hospital, spent in excess of $40 million on an addition and rebuild. We also have the affiliated community medical centers headquartered out of the city of Willmar. And Willmar is a regional center for health care, with both of those facilities being there. We also spent in excess of $20 million on moving our airport out of town for a number of reasons. Number one, for a safety issue. Number two, for having the ability of utilizing that land for expansion of our industrial park. We also just recently concluded a project that was in excess of $80 million on the expansion of and moving of our wastewater treatment facility. Now, those are all done with anticipated industrial economic growth within our community. And we also have a MinWest Technology Campus, the old state hospital, or the regional treatment center, which is really a sterling success within our area. If you're not aware of that, I would love to share some of the successes with you at any time. But we need your help. Transportation, as you know, is a key in industrial and economic development and expansion. And right now, like I said, there's a two-lane highway for 2 different 7-mile segments between I-94 and Willmar that's in need of reconstruction into the four-lane. And we need your help. And so do the communities even beyond Willmar. So I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Are there questions of the commissioner? Representative Earhart?
No, I don't have.
Oh, okay. He usually has a question related to this, but maybe he's not going to ask it today.
Well, I have some questions on this, and when we get to that,
okay.
It should be next.
Okay. Members, is there any further discussion of the Highway 23 issue the members have? Representative Sprosky, did you want to make any concluding comments here?
I will make a remark.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, to build trunk highways, we need trunk highway bonds. And this is the wrong vehicle to ask for trunk highway bonds, because they do not go into the bonding bill that goes to the bonding committee. The only trunk highway association that goes in there traditionally is for transportation buildings, but not for highways. That means we're breaking a second principle here, and that we're earmarking sections or particular roads, which is the tradition we also don't go through. So by putting them into this bill, this should be non-trunk highway bonds, and there, half of this list or more, probably almost all of those trunk highway bonds.
Okay. This is a good opportunity to then revisit with the committee exactly what we're doing here with this ballot. This is not a bill, first of all. We are hearing individual bonding bills in this committee that relate to transportation. The purpose of doing that is to familiarize the committee with a lot of these different corridors, a lot of these different transit and highway corridors, other kinds of transportation infrastructure. It serves that purpose. Number two, it gives our members an opportunity to get a bonding bill heard in this committee. But all of the bonding decisions, and I will repeat this, all of the bonding decisions will be made in the Capital Investment Committee. And so it has been a long-standing tradition that we provide some non-binding direction to the Capital Investment Chair, who can choose to take it or choose not to take it. But we are just simply hearing these bills. Most chairs, not all, most chairs over the years have done this process. I'm doing it because I think it's a very, very important tool for our committee, because whether these are projects are chosen to be funded in the bonding bill or might be funded another way, we don't earmark in our bills specific highways in the transportation finance bill, but these are all potentially in need of funding. And so, Representative Earhart, you had a bill yesterday that, you know, would be a potential funding source for some of these corridors. So I'm emphasizing this is not a bill. This is not a binding recommendation. It's simply your opportunity to weigh in on what you personally feel are priority projects that can be advised. If this is a process that people don't like, or we should break with the tradition, I'm interested in hearing that. But this is the path we've chosen, at least for this particular first year of this biennium. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly, you know, we have had opportunities for trunk highway bonding in the transportation bill. I'm glad to hear that you're not recommending that we break from our funding in individual projects. And so as I look at this form, I mean, some of the ways that this has been done in the past is you rank from, you know, 1 to 10 what you think your highest priorities are. I mean, if I look at this list, and if I'm a stickler for no project-specific road funding, I can't even get to 10 things on this list. And I can tell you what my top three or four are. And another process that's been used in the past is that you get 100 points to spend. So in other words, it equals to what portion of the transportation investment should go to roads, rail, transit, and that way you get kind of a delineation of how resources should be distributed. But I find this really hard to get to 10 things, because so many of them are individual projects. And I think what it does when you do this is that you have people running around trying to get coalitions. Well, I'll vote for your 23 if you vote for my 14, and I'm not sure what we accomplished by that.
Well, members, I mean, I'm flexible. We have one ballot that can be returned to that someone was already conscientiously willing to fill. Are people feel that Representative Holberg's idea works better, because I'm open to that.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you want to make a list of projects other than those that require trunk highway bonds and send it over to Alice's committee, that's one thing. But I don't think we should be sending Highway 14 or Highway 23 as a list that we want her to carry in that bill, because that's not the way we do it. Because then we're earmarking and we're sending it to the wrong committee.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, this is a good example. I mean, Representative Earhart, Mr. Holberg, you don't want to do earmarks? I don't like earmarks either. I've gotten nothing but grief in my committee because I'm trying to do competitive grants. So everyone on the committee now understands what earmarking, and if you put trunk highway bonds on this particular list, it's kind of a moot point. So I don't know that we need to change the process, but if we have the information, you know, we all question each other's intelligence, but you know, both sides of the aisle, but we can figure this out.
Okay, I'm going to ask Representative Beard for some advice. I know I'm trying to do, I think, maybe I'm not sure if I did it correctly, but I'm trying to do something similar to what he did last year.
Yes.
So Representative Beard, are we doing this correctly? Do you have some advice?
Mr. Chairman, on the ones that we're requesting general obligation bonding, I'm looking at my committee administrator and remember, did we do 10-9-8, kind of do backwards, and then kind of score them that way, or did we just put an X by the ones we thought we wanted to move along? Because whatever the process was, Mr. Chair, by the time it came back, the top eight or nine were very clear, bipartisanly, which ones we had overwhelming support for. And I think we just checked the box and counted the number of yeses. No, we didn't. We just did a straight vote. We just did an X. That's what I'm recalling. But I should point out, we sent them to the chair of capital investment, who then did.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think we're hopefully, I want to do an election that makes sense. Grabs of how, and then I think I have an idea to get us out of this
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is I think we requested from MnDOT the plan, where these are in the plan, the STIP. Where are the 10, the 20, where are they at on the list? And that would help us also. And we requested that information, and I haven't seen it. And that would be a great help in looking at what we think should or shouldn't be in the plan.
Okay. Another very important question that is helpful for clarification. You may be talking about the STIP list. Is that and so this is, again, this is only related to bonding. I have an idea. I'm going to ask Representative Swatsky doesn't have to. I think this is interesting for. I think this is interesting for her and her witnesses. But you really don't have to. You've done your job. You've done your yo person's work. So, So, members, I think that what we ought to do here, I think that combines Representative Beard and Representative Holberg's idea is that, you know, just put a check mark by the up to 10, and if there's only four, then, you know, you can leave them the others blank. Yes, Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair,
you're good on process, so I'll follow
Mr. Chair,
you.
Mr. Chair, maybe can we have 10 hashes? So if we, in other words, if we think that the road's of regional significance, it was really high priority, we could put 7 checks there and 2 on port and one on rail, or I mean, so you have at least some.
Okay, so you're proposing that you have 10 votes. You could put all 10 on Southwest Corridor if you choose.
Right.
And okay, members, that seems to make sense. Again, this is a non-binding recommendation. I'm not hung up on how we do it. I just want to make sure that members feel like this is a fair process and they're empowered. And I will go with Representative Holberg's
Mr. Chairman, again, I reiterate, we should only be talking about GO bonding that we're sending there.
Okay, well, that's...
And that's what we should confine our X's and Y's
to. You're free to do that, Representative Earhart, on your ballot. Representative,
well,
and then
I'm
we're going to
be more than free, Mr. Chairman, if we end up with a bunch of trunk highway bonding in the general obligation.
Representative Earhart, this is a non-binding recommendation to the chair of the Capital Investment Committee, who will take our advice as she pleases. So if she chooses to follow the direction that you're proposing, she will do that.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, we ought to have this settled before we decide what we're going to send to her. And we, if not anything else, we should call her in here and ask whether if she is going to do geo bonding, okay. If she's going to do trunk highway bonding, that's another matter. This is a critical matter for
I understand,
the tradition of this transportation committee.
I understand, Representative Hart. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just ask my colleagues to remember that there are two very valuable projects that will be presented tomorrow. So I do ask that you keep your eyes open for those Nicollet County projects and maybe consider those. So, as a teacher, I'm going to suggest don't do all of your homework tonight, but you can do part of it. Keep an open mind to those. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Members, we are going to be in recess until I believe 15 minutes after session. We're going to get to Representative Earhart's omnibus policy bill, and the room is 300 South. I'll be making a announcement on the floor if there's any changes, but we're in recess until 15 minutes after session, room 300 South. Thank you, Representative Swatsky. We'll be taking up
our
only agenda item. Two agenda items, Representative Ward and Representative Earhart. Thank you very much. We're in recess.
Okay. Welcome back, members. We're no longer in recess. And we just have a couple of bills left today on our agenda. And the first one is House File 1223, Representative Ward. We heard this in the Policy Committee, and I think it's pretty straightforward, but we'll have you present your bill and your witness, and then we'll take action. So welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the rest of the committee. There are some of you that we didn't see earlier. I'm Representative Joanne Ward, representing portions of Ramsey and Washington County. I'm here today to introduce a bill supporting the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority's continued efforts to advance the development of regional transitways in Washington County. These transitways include the Gateway, Rush Line, Red Rock, and Highway 36 corridors. Investments in our transportation system will improve mobility as the East Metro continues to grow and will increase access to jobs, strengthening the business community by allowing them to better connect with their employees, their goods and services, and ultimately with their customers. Current Minnesota statute section 398A allows for regional railroad authority to expend funds to plan, develop, design, and possibly construct and operate transit improvements as long as there is a rail component being considered for the project. However, regional railroad authority statutory rights do not include bus rapid transit or BRT projects. As the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority continues to analyze its transitway corridors, bus rapid transit, BRT, is becoming a viable and cost-effective solution for implementing higher-level transit improvements. This request is simply grant the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority the same statutory rights for BRT that are permitted for LRT, allowing the authority to continue to extend funds to advance the development of its regional transitways. An identical request was granted for the Dakota County Regional Railroad Authority in 2005 to allow for the development of the Cedar Avenue BRT corridor. Here today is Washington County Commissioner Lisa White, who will provide more information about this needed legislative change.
Hi, Commissioner Wyke. We've gotten a couple of county, Washington County commissioners for your bill.
Yes. And I just saw you at the Humphrey Institute.
So yeah, okay.
Out at that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ward and members. It's my pleasure to be here. I am Washington County Commissioner Lisa Wyke. I represent District 5, which is the majority of Woodbury, and I am also chair of the county board. I just have a few brief remarks. So as Representative Ward noted, this bill is needed to continue to advance the development of transitway corridors in Washington County and would allow an expansion of the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority to include bus rapid transit technology. In the Twin Cities metropolitan region, the county regional railroad authorities are the primary entities that lead and fund the initial planning and development phases for regional transitways. But once transitway projects have entered into the engineering construction phase, the Metropolitan Council becomes the lead agency, and the primary role of the regional railroad authority is to become a funding partner responsible for a 10% local match. So, of note is that we are not proposing to change the current effective governance structure or the funding formula. We simply would like to continue to advance the development of transitway corridors and consider bus rapid transit as a viable option to build out a truly multimodal regional transit system. Although regional railroad authorities are allowed to look at BRT as an option in the initial planning and feasibility stages, if a locally preferred alternative is selected that does not include a rail component, funds can no longer be expended by the county and regional railroad authority, and that we are the same five members as the Washington County Board of Commissioners. So to conclude, this legislative change will allow the Washington County Regional Railroad Authority to move beyond feasibility stages and help the region build out a multimodal transitway system. Thank you, and I'll stand for questions.
Okay, are there any questions about this bill, Representative Ward's bill? Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, hearing no questions or comments, I don't know if we ever moved your bill, but I'm going to move House File 1223 for possible inclusion in the transfer.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm curious, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, what level of ridership would you expect on such a rapid transitway?
I'm so glad you asked that. Commissioner White actually checked into that, so she has the story on that one.
Well, I am chair of the Gateway Corridor Commission as well, and so as we're doing our planning, bus rapid transit in a fixed guideway along the frontage road just outside of the interstate and corridor, the projections are between 9,000 and 10,000 riders a day for bus rapid transit in a guideway.
Representative Mahoney.
You're conspiring. You don't want me to speak here. having looked at the Gateway Corridor pathway, my question is, I mean, typically we do transit corridors to do economic development. You run this right next to 94. You have one stop at a 3M industrial place, which is great, and you have like one stop, I think, at Earl, and then you're down at the Union Depot. So there is absolutely no ability for economic development on St. Paul's east side. More, it's not really a question, just a simple statement of fact, and I will tell the committee that I have been fighting against this route on the Gateway Corridor since I put it, which was, I'm sorry to say, just about a year ago. It makes absolutely no sense to me. It doesn't do anything for the economic development of the east side. It just moves people from Woodbury to downtown St. Paul and skips St. Paul. So that's just my comment. Good luck. I mean, I hope the chair takes a strong and fair look.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Did you have any further comments? We don't want to necessarily get into a big debate, but
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. We did look at that. The commission did decide, and it is written in our report that the area that you're talking about could be served through the rush line corridor as well. So we do offer advice that that area be studied further for service, but in the other corridor. So again, I think the route with the stations that were planned at Sunray and closer to Metro State U and then into Union Depot was meant to move the most people then with maybe either another line that can serve the area that you're talking about or the supplemental service that could also increase mobility options and grow economic development without disrupting some of the businesses that were along there as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Commissioner, you have your story.
I live on the east side, and it going with the rush line, it puts it out that many more years, and so I don't quite understand why you're going to disrupt city streets even, because all you're trying to do is move people from Woodbury to downtown and get them on the green line and on their way. Well, again, I just don't understand why. I'll stop.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. That's kind of the way things go as metropolitan areas grow. But I would also say that one of the reasons that 3M is interested in this and having a stop at Sunray and 3M is that they're expecting in the next 10 years to have a significant shift in their employees. The younger people, that they have like 30% of their employees worldwide will be retiring in the next 5 years because we're, you know, many of them are my age. And they're expecting to recruit young people who want to live in the city, and they will be commuting out. And that's kind of the projection in that direction. The other point is that there are a lot of people who come clear from Wisconsin. It isn't just Woodbury. There's a stop planned at Manning now, but eventually the whole corridor was a railroad originally, and that's where all the communities developed along that, what we now think of as the 94 corridor, because that was originally the railroad coming from Wisconsin into St. Paul. And that contributed to all of the business and economic development along that line and the settlements.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
To a freshman, you might have wanted to stop a while ago. And I'm going to really bite my tongue at this point. I think I've made my attitude towards this particular line known. And if this line, if this was a vote, if it was on this sheet right here, it would get zero. It would get, my vote will not be for the Transportation Committee omnibus bill if the Gateway Corridor was in it, the way it is designed right now. I think it just totally serves people from Woodbury to downtown and skips everybody else. So, and if you look at it, there's no stops in St. Paul other than at Sunway Shopping Center and at the Metro State. Well, frankly, no one lives at Metro State, and no one lives at Sunway, and no one lives at 3M, and no one lives at the Union Depot. Oh, wait a minute, there's 9 or 12 condos there. So, good luck. Good luck with your bill. Good luck with your bill.
So, members, this is important. We had some issues surface here that I'm familiar with. Representative Mahoney has talked with me, and all I can say is that it would be helpful if Ramsey and Washington, got together a little bit more on this, and particularly with some of the folks on the east side of St. Paul. These issues happen all the time. They can be worked out, but it always helps to have buy-in from as many people as possible. But, I think I've shared with you, Representative Ward, that this was a corridor I co-authored a bill for in 2003 with Representative Klinzing. So, it's been one that I've felt always needed attention, and I hope it will finally, in the coming years. So I think that there are a couple more questions. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, just a comment which will probably incite my colleague from St. Paul to speak even further, but this is exactly the philosophical debate we've been having for years over why we need transit ways. Some of us thought it was all about mobility and moving people, and it was actually a transportation tool, which is why we get so consternated, I guess, when we see transportation-type dollars going to what we consider to be basically redevelopment schemes. We were sold the Hiawatha Corridor as a transportation tool. Basically, it was a redevelopment tool for the Hiawatha Corridor is what it was, members. Very little congestion relief. Admittedly, very helpful for the airport and for all the people who got subsidized loans to build new apartment buildings at the station stops.
The same with Central Corridor. The most successful bus line that we've had is going to be supplanted by a light rail line, which is basically seen by many of us as basically urban redevelopment between here and downtown Minneapolis. Some of us actually have economic development happening in our neighborhoods, and what we need is a way to move a lot of people at the lowest cost possible with the dollars the taxpayers give us. And in many cases, BRT is what works. It's why we did that in Apple Valley. BRT in Apple Valley has absolutely nothing to do with economic redevelopment and everything to do with moving people and trying to relieve a little congestion on Cedar Avenue. So I understand that you've done the study. You looked at your situation. One size does not fit all is sort of the principle that we can look at here. And so thank you for bringing it forward, and we'll see how it unfolds. But I'm just glad that we have a chance to know that sometimes it's not about moving people. It is indeed urban redevelopment. I just wish that we could face up to it when we get those schemes and say this is what it's about and admit that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we had one more comment or question from Representative Earhart.
I was just wondering, Mr. Chairman, have you, a couple of these lines, transitways were originally kind of thought about as rail lines. Have you kind of abandoned that thought and you're going for BTR now? Or?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, we did eliminate commuter rail from the Gateway Corridor. The actual corridor is 90 miles long. The construction area would be Union Depot to the east, eastern city limits of Woodbury, which is Nanny Avenue. It did not meet the project goals as well as the other options. Seemed okay. Much more viable, and that was why the commuter rail was eliminated. That and just the density, too, in western Wisconsin, so it was not seen as an economically feasible mode that would meet more of the goals that the project team had in mind. It's something that could be considered in the future. As Washington County is projected to add 130,000 people in the next 17 years, we're building a new Stillwater Bridge, also a mile south of the Lift Bridge in Stillwater, so then as western Wisconsin would continue to grow. It could be something that would be looked at in the future and was recommended for study between Minnesota and Wisconsin, that their rail authorities.
Cedar worst.
Representative Chairman, and, Representative Maloney, I don't particularly care what roads or streets or angles you take. I just want to make sure you keep it away from all the automobile dealerships.
That's an inside joke.
Well, the auto dealers are in the room.
Mr. Chairman, I thought Girl Scout
came. I will not comment. Okay, is there any further discussion? So I still need to move House File 1223 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. Is there any further discussion? Okay, we will revisit this in a couple weeks. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Johnson,
I would like to move that we reconsider the motion from last evening that HF House File 745 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Tax Committee.
Okay, members, this is a reconsideration of House File 745. It's within the rules of the House that a member can reconsider a vote. Representative Johnson, did you have a reason why you would like to have this issue reconsidered?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I spoke with folks in both North Mankato and St. Peter, which are the two dominant major cities in my district, and learned that they really feel this tool is necessary for them to maintain their streets, that with declining assessment values and increased costs of maintaining streets, the typical ways that they've been able to maintain streets are not viable anymore. And that's pretty basic city service, and consequently I'm asking for the reconsideration.
Thank you, members. Is there any discussion of the reconsideration? We did have thorough discussion from stakeholders last night, so I'd like to have a conversation in the committee about this. Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, this is not totally taking me by surprise, of course, we talked before. So I know you've got the votes to reconsider, but when we do move to final passage, I would like to request a roll call on it. and perhaps have some discussion if the motion does prevail to reconsider.
Okay. That is a fair request, Representative Beard.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Beard, did you want to request a roll call?
Mr. Chair, I'll request a roll call for passage. I understand the motion now is for reconsideration to bring
okay.
it back in front of the committee.
Okay. Yes, that's correct.
And then we'll vote again to move it from here to taxes, I think. So that's
okay.
the one off.
All those in favor of the motion to reconsider signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Now we're on the...
Usually customary to ask for the nays, Mr. Chair.
Oh, are there... Is anyone in opposition?
Nay.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Quick gavel today.
Well, that's a
term. Okay. All right, now we're on... I have never done a motion to reconsider before. So.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Earhart.
I want to thank you for reconsidering the vote, and with that, I would like to move House File 745 be recommended to pass and referred to the Tax Committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Representative Earhart, sorry
now,
about that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a roll call and just speak briefly to the bill again, if I could.
Please, Representative Beard.
Thank you. Members, we did a lengthy discussion about this last night, and we've seen iterations of this before. Over the years. In fact, as I mentioned last night, I actually carried it my freshman year and was beat silly about the head and shoulders for doing so. But anyhow, we had a discussion, Mr. Chairman, last night about the proper role of local government and what they do. And of course, one of the things local government does is give property value. And by parceling property into parcels that people can actually use, one of the things that's necessary to make that happen is establishments of streets. Some method of public right-of-way so that people can access their property and live their lives and build their widgets or whatever it is they want to do. The public streets that give property value are a core function of government and should be built into the property tax base. That's why I always get heartburn, Mr. Chairman, if I can use that word, when people claim that we subsidize roads and bridges with property taxes. Well, of course we do. It's what we're supposed to do, up to a point. Local streets should be paid for by local jurisdictions. This strikes me as just another mechanism, Mr. Chairman, for touching people and extracting more tax dollars. At the end of the day, it's still a tax dollar. Members, and particularly, my biggest area of concern is those of us that have productive parcels, like, say, a supermarket, a shopping center, a YMCA, you name it, that has a lot of parking places. They're the ones that are going to be hit the most, and they're the ones that pay the lion's share of the property taxes in the first place. So, Mr. Chairman, I see this as, while sympathetic to the towns and their interest in repaving roads, as a tool that probably is overreach, and I request a roll call vote on it.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll on the motion to reconsider House File 745. Earhart motion to pass and re-refer House File 745 to the Committee on Taxes.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Bernardi?
Yes.
Beard?
Nay.
Benson?
No.
Dean?
Yes.
Earhart?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Howe?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Metza?
Yes.
O'Neill?
No.
Petersburg?
No.
Sundin?
Yes.
There are not... Yes, I understand. There are 9 ayes and 6 nays. The motion prevails. So this bill is now on the way to the Tax Committee. Thank you, members. We have one more bill to reconsider. To consider. I am not on my game. This is really throwing me off, members. We may end up reconsidering it, Representative Beard. I don't know. But before we do that, I feel like I'm the speaker, and I'll just say, having taken the advice this morning of Representatives Earhart, Beard, and Holberg, we have a new, what we're calling a bond rating sheet,
for our bills. And a special shout-out to Representative Benson, who has always been very prompt in getting his in. What's that? Oh, and Mark Nicely, yes, who showed me. My memory was correct in terms of how it was done last year, so thank you for that. So we're going to do this the right way, and we have separated out the trunk highway and general obligation bonding, and then we're going to incorporate Representative Holbrook's suggestion. You get 10 votes, 10 hash marks, if you will. So, you know, Representative O'Neill and I, for example, use all 10 of ours for the Southwest Light Rail, and no, I'm joking.
And Botanow.
That is a joke. Yeah,
right. Love it.
Representative Petersburg, do you have a question?
Oh, just checking. So this is 10 hash marks for both sections or 10 hash marks for each section?
Total.
Total.
So with that, I hope we have allayed the concerns of members from this morning. I appreciate your advice. I'm flexible. I want to accommodate everybody's interests here. And the same rule applies to get this to Mr. Scheer an hour after our meeting tomorrow. So thank you very much for your consideration of that, members. And now, Representative Earhart.
Okay, you'll have to move it. Okay, can you run all
that? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make one announcement that all of the dissenters of that last bill that we just sent on ahead, we will have a gathering after the holidays to discuss any of the problems they have with it. There are several of the, and we'll get a room big enough to handle all the people that want to come and see if we can resolve our differences. So look forward to that. After the
So, Representative Earhart, I think this bill will be going to Ways and Means. Is that your understanding?
I would think so, Mr. Well, there's no
Well, we have only some fiscal notes associated with this bill.
Girl Scouts have weighed in.
He doesn't get a cookie. Girl Scouts wouldn't want him to get a cookie.
So, Representative Earhart, I imagine you're moving House File 1416 for passage and re-referral to Ways and Means. Correct. Yeah. Okay. To the bill, House File 1416.
Okay. I'm going to just touch on a couple of things that I think Council will go through the essence of the bill and look at questions. At least half of this bill is drawn from agency bills that have been put forth at the request of the Department of Transportation, Department of Public Safety, and so forth. So, Mr. Burns, would you like to review the moving parts, sir?
Mr. Burns?
Mr. Chair and members,
do we have an amendment? We have the other amendments. Two amendments. Will we do those now, Mr. Chairman?
How about we do this, Chairman Earhart? Let's move through the bill, and then we can take amendments.
Thank you.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, there are provisions reflect several original bills that have been heard in transportation policy. First of those is a MnDOT agency
and housekeeping and policy set of provisions. Okay. Those touch on logo signs, variances, variance notifications under the state aid program, the payment cycle or system for payments to transit providers, some changes in traffic rules on signage at rail crossings, as well as provision related to medical examiners and their requirements to issue commercial driver's licenses. Another MnDOT agency provision concerns a couple of designations of legislative routes, as well as arranging for turnbacks to of trunk highways to the local state aid system. There is a MnDOT provision on modifying the uses of allowable funds for the I-394 corridor and the ABC parking ramps. There's an account that receives funds from the parking ramps. There's a provision establishing a new Officer Tom Decker Memorial Highway. There's also a set of housekeeping policy provisions from the Department of Public Safety. These center on vehicle registration, some changes to veterans plates design and plate offerings, some changes related to motor vehicle dealer regulations. Similar to MnDOT's changes, there's proposed changes on medical examiner requirements, and then a couple of changes on provisions related to enhanced identification cards. There are also some Department of Public Safety provisions on pupil transportation, making clarifications on terminology and definitions related to some of the vehicles used in pupil transportation and pupil transportation regulation. There's a provision that's also coming from the Department of Public Safety on local authority for authority for local units of government to limit certain flashing lights. There are three sets of changes related to bicycles. One set modifies some of the rules for drivers in driving rules and how they interact with bicycles, particularly their the driving relative to bicycle lanes. The second set relates to riding rules for bicyclists, rules that they have to follow, as well as equipment requirements for bicycles. And the third is a prohibition on parking in a bicycle lane. A couple of provisions modifying disability parking regulations. There's a weight limit increase for idle reduction technology that's associated with commercial motor vehicles. The omnibus bill also contains the transportation ombudsperson provision, codifying the ombudsperson office in MnDOT. There's an agency, MnDOT agency provision establishing a public-private partnership joint office. There are a couple of provisions related to the authority for passenger rail. Again, that's MnDOT's authority in establishing and administering passenger rail programming. There are two land conveyance provisions. One's in Couchiching County, the other is in Le Sueur. These are both agency initiatives. This is MnDOT land. Finally, there's a provision on autonomous vehicles.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Earhart, did you want to comment further? We can have discussion of the bill.
Do you
want to
add the
amendments? Sure. Let's get the bill in the shape that the author would like. So the first amendment is A-17. That deals with the railroads. This was, members, I can provide some context for this. I think Representative Beard, I'm trying to think who else saw this, Representative Peterson. Representative Sundin, Representative Mason. In the policy committee, we actually did have a pretty major disagreement between MnDOT and the United Transportation Union about this provision. And they have come to agreement. They've come to agreement, and we're pleased with that. It was a kind of a precondition of mine for moving that part of the bill, and so I'm very happy about that. I don't know, Representative Earhart, if you wanted to comment on that, or if we needed to have MnDOT and or the UTU, or is the committee satisfied with this?
I didn't see that amendment, Mr. Chairman, but I know that it was agreed on by all parties, as far as I know, and so I haven't read it.
Right. Okay, so we do have, here's another legislative, something I didn't know until I got here, Peace in the Valley. Apparently there's peace in the MnDOT-UTU Valley. So are there questions? I figured Representative Beard would want some clarity here.
I just would like to comment to it. I did have the UTU gentleman brought to his national council, Mr. Mann, and we had a lengthy chat about this in my office the other day. And then I just communicated briefly with the MnDOT folks, and they're okay. I understand now what he's trying to do is apparently the process was a little jammed and a little rushed, and so we naturally had some questions and not understanding all the legalese, what does this mean? But having had time to step back, catch our breath, and vet it, I think that the wings aren't going to fall off if we pass this legislation. Still not convinced it's absolutely necessary, but it does, at least no harm shall come. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'd encourage everybody just to be okay with this. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and I do appreciate the parties working hard to resolve this. Is there any further discussion about the A-17 amendment? All those in favor, I believe this is the H-1416A-17 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Metza has an amendment. It is the A-13-0336 amendment. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I've never moved an amendment before, so.
We're all learning together, apparently, from my performance today.
We get to learn. Hey, that's pretty good when a freshman gets to learn chairman. I do have some folks here who would like to say a few words about it if there are any questions. Otherwise, the basic gist of what my amendment does is requires that we use Minnesota manufactured solar when we're installing it on our state funded projects. So
Representative Metza, in terms of inclusion in this particular bill, is there something that sort of led you to this bill?
Well, you know, as listening and as all of us as representatives do, we look out for our districts and our businesses there. And so we have an initiative we've been working on making the range a little greener. And we recently, the last few years, have a company that's moved in of nationwide stature. These are Department of Defense qualified solar panels. And so they're a real good nationwide company that's working hard. And we got them to come up to the range and build a factory, and we've got good members of IBW putting these things together up there. And so I've been thinking, you know, we had a discussion a while back where one of the transit teams was putting together the information on the bus stops and on some of our, I believe it was Zach Dorholt, was talking about some of the buses being manufactured out in his districts with solar panels on top. And I figured, man, it'd be great. I know there's other companies in the state that do this as well. It'd be great if we gave our Minnesota companies the opportunity to take part in this business as long as we're using the state dollars. So,
thank you. I think I will anticipate Representative Benson's question, but Representative Benson.
Well, I mean, if I was speaking as I teach economics, so I have some concerns about that. But I just the comment is, if I'm not mistaken, this is the same group of folks that was brought up on the House floor in regards to some political donations. And you know, in as much as I try to support Minnesota manufacturers too, you know, I have some concern about. The issues as it relates to that whole spin. So,
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I know Target's been a pretty big donor of the Republican caucus, and I'd hate to say that if we voted as a group to do something good to help a good business like Target in our state succeed, that you'd point fingers at the donations they might have gave to all of your colleagues.
Yeah. Representative Benson,
I'll just leave it with this. I'm not aware that my campaign at least got any from Target, so
that's why I said caucus. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to try to limit the discussion to the bill. Representative Sundin, and then we'll have Representative Beard.
This is coming from a guy that didn't get money from Target or this company. I don't even know the name of the company. Sorry. But I remember when that was first started, there was IRRB money invested into this to get them off the ground and up and going, and I think this is just a good circulation of money here. You know, we've got public investment into this company already. Let's keep it going right here in the state.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've, without getting into the sentimentality of helping Minnesota friends, there are Minnesota companies that sell stuff all over the world, and I hope these folks can too if they can make a product that can compete in the marketplace, and I'm sure they'll get there someday. But I'm wondering about a piece we had in the energy bill that mandates vertical construction is required to spend so much on solar or investigating renewable energy sources or something like that. And I'm sorry we're not in the Energy Committee. Perhaps we should refer the bill to the Energy Committee instead of Ways and Means. But, Mr. Chairman, I think there's a mandate in there for public buildings that we should watch out for. Because when I first saw this, I took it to mean that if the commissioner decides he wants to put solar on, it would have to be Minnesota solar. But perhaps the maker of the motion or somebody in the audience can speak to what the real lay of the land is. If the commissioner builds a truck barn somewhere, does he have to put solar on it, or is it only if he chooses to?
We have.
And I don't know who can answer that exactly.
Representative Beard, we do have somebody that's able to address your question. So. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Gary Shaver. I'm the president of Silicon Energy.
There we go.
Okay. And you heard Representative Beard's question.
Could you? I was coming up to the front.
Okay.
Certainly. Sir, the mandate, is there a mandate in Minnesota law now that requires public buildings to have solar panels on them going forward?
There is a 5% for state buildings that would require that there be Minnesota-made photovoltaics or solar thermal. That's true.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Then, so if the commissioner DOT is going to build any rebuilding that we have, road, highway, road, bridge, I'm trying to think of how we get 5% solar in there. I could see, you know, a truck barn in the middle of nowhere certainly having a solar panel on it or something like that, but I'm trying to figure out highways and bridges would fulfill the mandate that we've put on them. And any ideas on how that might work?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It's not mandated that every building has to have it on there or every structure that's on there. That's the choice of the commissioner to do that. Obviously, it's within reason when it makes sense to do that. So this bill just is ensuring that if there is solar that is being done, that it is making it so it's made in Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the gentleman used the words within reason and makes sense, and he's talking to the legislature, Mr. Chairman. So that's why we're vetting these things and talking about it. So, Mr. Chairman, I think it's an overreach. I'm going to have to ask that we vote respectfully no on it, again, with sympathies for our friends in the Iron Range, but I'll just leave my comments at that.
Did you want to comment any further on that? Or?
Mr. Chair, I think this isn't just focused on Silicon Energy. This is an overall for the state. So there are several manufacturers in the state. Some are module manufacturers, which takes the sunlight and changes it into DC. There are also other manufacturers in the state that are creating next-generation technology like we are in battery storage, which I think for the state is a very good economic development argument to be made. Additionally, I think this bill really supports making investments in long-term assets for the state of high quality and high safety standards.
Thank you. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you actually touched on it, but I'd like to know how many companies are we talking about that manufacture solar panels for buildings and or remote signs, that type of thing that need to be lit?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shaver.
Representative Howe. So right now there are two module manufacturers. There is at least one inverter manufacturer or a battery storage manufacturer, and I've heard probably a couple of other manufacturers are considering moving in the state. So these bills, similarly to this, will bring additional manufacturing to the state and will create a competitive environment as we push to become more and more internationally competitive.
Representative Howe and then Representative O'Neill.
And my only comment is you know, I'm just concerned that with when we're just starting up, that the cost is just, there's just not enough competition right now. And I know that this is going to try to drive that competition, but I just think we're a little too soon.
Gin up my amendment for
thanks.
Minnesota biodiesel.
Mr. Shaver.
Yeah. So right now there are very large companies in the world that are already creating a very competitive environment. So this doesn't lock anybody out of the state from, one, entering in and committing to the state in putting manufacturing in the state. It also doesn't prevent anybody from coming in state and competing. What it does do is it's really focusing on high quality, local job creation, local economic stimulus. So this, I think, is a win-win for everybody. You're getting solar, you're getting it moving forward with next-generation technologies, and you're promoting your local economy.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So last night I had the opportunity to go to the Cooperative Network, and I sat down at a table with different people from energy co-ops, from Land O'Lakes, and we had a long discussion about solar energy specifically. And, you know, what I heard from the people that are actually out there trying to make a living, trying to produce the energy, trying to provide for their customers, trying to make cheese and sell it around the world, there was tremendous concern, outrageous concern about the mandates that we are rolling out in Minnesota. Let me just give you one example. With the 10% solar mandate, which I realize it's not at 10% anymore, it was figured out by their actuaries from the co-ops that the cost to a family of four just to install the capital to make that work is $20,000 per family. $20,000 more of a rate hike. Now this is coming from a co-op, from an energy company. $20,000 for a family of four. $20,000 of a rate hike for a family of four just to put all the solar in. Now we move to Land O'Lakes. In order to be competitive in a global market, Land O'Lakes must sell their cheese at $1.70 per pound. Do you know what it costs Land O'Lakes to produce cheese in the state of Minnesota? $2 per pound. And we're going to raise the mandates, and now we're going to make it even harder because we can only purchase from Minnesota. How much harder are we going to make it on the rest of Minnesota? Land O'Lakes can't even sell their cheese. They take a loss to export their cheese outside of Minnesota globally. We have to think about a global market. If we continue down this path of increased mandates, increased expenses, increased rates on our rate customer, on the customers, increased taxes, we are going to have, Minnesota is going to be this island of deficits and hyperinflation and unemployment and everything else. All around us, Wisconsin, Iowa, the Dakotas, are going to be prosperous. This to me is a huge slippery slope of saying, well, we can only do this. You know, I didn't even know that now that there's a mandate on our public buildings of 5% solar. I can't imagine what that will do to the expense of energy. Like I said, these co-ops were telling me that if that 10% solar mandate went forward, it would cost $20,000 for a family of four. This to me is a huge, huge problem. It's too much. It's too fast. We can't we can't absorb this cost. The families can't absorb it. The state of Minnesota can't absorb it. I don't know. We need to just slow down. And this, to me, just limits, like Representative Howe was saying, no competition. I feel like we're cutting off our nose to spite our face. I say no. Vote no, please.
Mr. Shaver, did you want to respond to
anything? Mr. Chair. I understand your sentiments. I think a couple of things to look at is that no one in any of these bills is that's being discussed is restricted from coming into the state. So nobody's given full rein on the state. I think the second thing is that in global trade, what we're doing is that we are helping Minnesota companies get back what the United States and local companies used to have before we gave the technologies away. The United States was decades ahead in technology. So what we're doing is we're now joining the environmental and the economic arguments and putting them together. A third point is that Silicon Energy is not in support of the 10% mandate. We take a moderate position as a business. We understand the struggles of businesses. What we're looking is to become, to provide economic development for the state, create jobs in the state, create more money for people to buy those products that Land O'Lakes makes. That's what we're about.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm intrigued because I have a biodiesel plant located in my district, and I want to promote more biodiesel. And so I'm thinking whether it's for the state snow plows or mining equipment or trains, we should have that debate some more. And I'm gonna follow this closely.
Do I need to repeat that?
Yeah, just briefly. Representative. Well, it's not. Well, we also have some noise in the audience, so if people could.
I have a biodiesel plant in my district, and I'm a strong supporter of biodiesel, and I'm going to follow this closely. And I probably should have had an amendment up here ready for today, so that we'll be burning more biodiesel in snowplows, Minnesota. Biodiesel,
snowplows,
and mining equipment, trains. We should have that debate.
Yeah. They'll be there, ready for
the floor. Well, and you'll have probably this bill and the energy omnibus bill. I'm sorry,
Representative Metzler.
Aren't these orders just off?
No. Okay.
All right. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? A13-0336 amendment. Representative Metza, did you have any final closing thoughts about that?
Just encourage you all to vote yes, and thanks for your consideration.
Okay. Representative Earhart?
Do we not have a mandate on certain steel to be used made in Minnesota on certain products right now?
Representative Metza?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, currently we are working on that legislation.
Okay. How about, Mr. Chairman, on flags made in Minnesota or America? I can't remember which.
The Rukavina Initiative, Representative Metza?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, my predecessor did pass the all U.S. flags have to be made in the United States if they're going to be sold in Minnesota.
Construction workers have to. It's not cheaper to get the American flags made in China, but on the other hand, there is a point to be set for making them here and flying them.
Thank you. Okay. Hearing no further discussion, we will vote on the A13-0336 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Okay, Representative Earhart. Any other amendments by either the author or members of the committee? Any further amendments? Last call. Seeing none, we will then move to our discussion of House File 1416 as amended. Do you have any closing
comments, Representative Earhart? This is going to Ways and Means, by the way.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, I think everybody's had a whack at the various parts of this thing as we moved along, and hopefully we can now be satisfied that all the questions have been answered, and it's time now to move out to the Ways and Means and beyond. So I appreciate your approach.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to breach protocol and speak after the author of the bill has spoken his summing remarks, but I just wanted to make one comment because I missed, it was one of those days when I had to be in three committees at once, and this is the one that I had to miss. On page 18 of the bill, we've got the favorite transit mode of the week, I guess, is bicycles, apparently, and I've had this discussion with our friends from Minneapolis about what they're trying to do with bike lanes and so on. And as I tongue-in-cheek commented a few moments ago, you know, common sense and so on, we're trying to employ here. Well, Mr. Chairman, there's just a couple of comments as we think of, put on our engineering hats and think like traffic engineers for a moment. Blending traffic types, if you're trying to have a safe traffic environment, is something you really need to pay attention to. And I know bikes are all de jure right now, and everybody wants to have them and take care of them. But let me talk to you about, from my railroading background, I was going to tell you a story about rights of trains, but I don't know that trains are as flexible as bicycles, so let me move instead to something else I know about, aviation and navigating on waterways. Folks, there's what we call yielding the right of way. There's a whole theory behind that, that the more maneuverable you are, the lower down the totem pole you are. I'll give you an example. In the aviation world, hot air balloons have precedence over everything. Everything must yield right away to a hot air balloon because hot air balloons are not very maneuverable. When they do maneuver, it's very slow and they only go basically up and down where the wind blows. Blimps have to yield right away to hot air balloons. Skydivers have to yield right away to blimps and hot air balloons. Gliders have to yield right away to skydivers, blimps, and hot air balloons because gliders can move in several axes, but they don't have an engine. So guess who's at the bottom of the totem pole? Me and my airplane. I have to avoid everything else in the sky because I'm more maneuverable than gliders, skydivers, blimps, and balloons. Let's talk about the waterways for a minute. Guess who has precedence, a tugboat with a barge or a jet ski? The jet ski always goes to the back of the line. He has to see and avoid everything else on the river because the tugboat and the barge has right of way. And folks, it's not because we like jet skis and think they're sexier. That's not the point. The point is the tugboat is not maneuverable like the jet ski is. So the jet ski gets to see and avoid. It's just the rule of the road. Folks, it's physics. Common sense does come into play here because every safety engineer knows speed doesn't kill. Speed differential kills. So when you're mixing slow traffic, highly maneuverable traffic, with traffic that may have blind spots, traffic that weighs, 500 times more than the bicycle, you don't put them in the same place at the same time. Again, I know I'm running completely against the culture of the moment, particularly in the Class 1 cities, but this whole business of taking away bike lanes, taking away traffic lanes and making them bike lanes, and then putting them in between, for crying out loud, parked cars and cars that are moving, and then expecting the automobiles to bear the onus of avoiding the bicycle is absolutely antithetical to good engineering and to good traffic safety. Somehow this is in the bill on page 18. Mr. Chairman, I don't think it should take down the whole bill, but I got to tell you, we need to have a serious adult chat about what we're doing here. Somehow now, somebody turning right, imagine this, we're in an intersection where we got pedestrians, we love pedestrians too, they're pretty cool right now, they're doing the crosswalks. Traffic signals could be flashing. There's traffic in other directions. The sun might even be in your eyes. You got your turn signal on. You're looking left to make sure nobody's running the traffic light. You're looking right to make sure no pedestrian just stepped in front of you. Meanwhile, here comes a bicycle from your right rear in the blind spot of all places. You turn, bam, bike hits you in the quarter panel. Guess who's at fault? If this passes, the automobile is at fault, not the bicycle. And I got to tell you, we're changing traffic law in such a way that if you have an accident and you're in your automobile and a pedestrian or a bike's involved, you'd probably better just pick up your phone and call your lawyer before you even call 911. Mr. Chairman, I just had to get off that off my chest, that there is 200 or 300 years, maybe more than that, of precedence on how we establish right-of-way. And somehow this committee, could, probably because I wasn't there to yell about it, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, just ran right over that and did this right turn thing where all of a sudden the bicycles have the right-of-way, even if they're coming from behind you and you got your turn signal on and you're turning in front of them. Holy cow, how did that happen? Mr. Chair, I'll probably vote for the bill, but I got to tell you, thank you.
Well, thank you. I know that this was Representative Kahn's provision,
yes.
I hope that you know, the two of you can meet, and you know, I'm happy to be a part of that. And you know, as this bill still has another stop, so she's on that committee, you're on that committee, and even though that's a Finance Committee, maybe,
yes,
just maybe, something can be worked out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to be fair, Representative Kahn, I did have a pleasant chat about it, expressed some of my concerns. She expressed how things work, because I think she said three times she's run into the back end of cars that have turned in front of her. Now, if they're not using their turn signal, shame on them. That's just silly on their part. It's thoughtless, is what it is. And our friends from Minneapolis did have a chat with me, too, about this, where I expressed some of the same concerns. But as I get to drive home and sit in rush hour traffic, I knew my best thinking in rush hour traffic. And these thoughts just came to me, and I wanted to share them.
Okay, no, I appreciate that, Representative Beard, definitely. And members, any other comments before we take a vote? Thank you, Representative Earhart, for all your hard work, not only on this bill, but the entire year in the Transportation Policy Committee. I guess you all are maybe going to have an occasional informational hearing, but your work is pretty much concluded for the session. So thank you for that. Okay. Okay, members, I believe we're ready to vote. Representative Earhart renews his motion that House File 1416 as amended be recommended to pass and sent on to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. So thank you, members. With that, that's our last order of business. Just a little bit of a roadmap for tomorrow and then the rest of the, well, at least the first couple weeks after we're back. We have the last of our bonding provisions, the bonding bills tomorrow, and I believe we have one other. We'll get to Representative Metz's announcement in a second. I think there may be one other bill on the agenda tomorrow. I hope you'll enjoy your break, and we'll come back and then work pretty hard the first week. The tentative schedule is that we'll have an omnibus finance bill posted early next week. We're hoping for Monday, April 1st, where it'll be posted. I'm sorry, not the next week, the first week of April. That would be very quick work. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. First week of April, posting on April Fool's Day. I think some people in the committee may look at it as a cruel April Fool's joke. Session hopefully that Tuesday to go over the bill, and then we'll spend a couple days hearing amendments and then voting this out next week. Now, that is subject to change, but that is the schedule for now. So I would encourage members, particularly all of us, but those who want to prepare amendments, to think about them, and then Mr. Burris will be on call again during break and that next week, but preferably during break. If you have an amendment, contact Representative Mr. Burris. As you can tell, it was a late night last night. But contact Mr. Burris, because he's going to have a pretty heavy workload. Don't give him last minute amendments. And I would encourage amendments from all quarters once you have a chance to react to this bill. Is there an announcement from Representative Metza?
Two quick things. I know we mentioned it on the floor today, but I'd like to invite all of you to our Ranger Party when we return on April 2nd for the best bipartisan party of the year. So And secondly, I know next week as representatives, we all get to go on break, and I just wanted to thank all our hardworking staff in this committee for their continued work through next Friday, because they don't get any days off till next Friday. So,
yeah, I think the Ranger Party may be a nice antidote to the once you see the Transportation Finance Bill. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
What time do we meet tomorrow?
9 a.m. tomorrow in the room. To be determined, look for your email. Room 5, we believe. Okay. Seeing no further business before the committee? Room 10. Okay. Room 10, 9, tomorrow. Thankfully, seeing no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.